Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The following production is part of the We Be Geeks podcast collective.
From days long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend.
The dream that came through a million years, that lived on through all the tears.
It came here, the Fandom Nexus.
Fabulous secret powers were revealed to our host as he plugged in his microphone.
I have a podcast!
Here he is, your Spider-Pan, Jeremy.
Yes, hello. It is time once again to walk into the Fandom Nexus, have a good old time, and then try to get through the week until we get to our next episode, right? You know, it's that withdrawal. That's what it is. It's withdrawal. It's after you have to get done with the show. And I've got a lot of fun planned for you this week. We're going to have some fun. I got some news, of course, for this week, but I'm keeping the news down to just that we had the Game Awards last week. And so I've picked out a few things that I'm kind of excited about for games that were announced, or we had some new trailers for, at least. And then, of course, we'll look at the winners. But I spent most of this show is going to, of course, be about another retro rewind, retro review. I got to make sure I call it the right thing. For basically what I call a movie that came out in the summer, but it is definitely a Christmas movie, and that would be Gremlins. And, of course, Emma will be joining us here on the show in order to talk about what she thought of it, as she has now seen it for the very first time. So that's, of course, a lot of different fun about there. And there's even some things that I meant to talk about with her that I completely forgot to talk about. So we'll get to those. I'll just throw those in here as we get to the end of the show. But I want to point something out to you. There's going to be two versions of this show. I had to edit down the conversation to kind of make it, fit. But that also means that we have an unedited version of the conversation about Gremlins that I will be making available through Patreon. And also, and I'll make sure I get links now in the show notes with Red Circle, where I'm hosting the show now. I can set up exclusive audio specifically for specific paid subscribers can get exclusive versions of shows and unedited. And I've already got a few things that I've moved into an exclusive territory, but I will make this available on an exclusive channel, an RSS feed. Like I said, the links should be in the show notes, provided I do all this right, so it'll be available to you if you want to hear an extended version. And it's at least another 12 minutes of stuff that I cut from the show, trying to get it, to be a bit more formatted within time. And also it's a few side conversations and stuff like that, where we got a little bit from Gremlins, but we talk about some other movies and stuff like that. And so I've made that part of the exclusive content. So being an exclusive member, you get some bonus episodes. It helps me pay for everything on the show. It's a win-win situation. Plus, I'm making sure that feed will not have those ads that you heard there at the beginning of the show, and the ads that break in the middle. Those ads won't be there. So, yeah, become an exclusive member today, or join our Patreon, become a patron on Patreon. Those links will all be in the show notes, also on the website. All right, but I want to get straight into some of the news that we have this week, which really boils down to new games and who won at the Video Game Awards. So let's take a listen.
Spanning the Disney and geek universe to bring you the best in comics, toys, movies, and entertainment. This is news from around Neverland.
Well, here's a game I did not know was coming at all.
I own an island off the coast of Costa Rica. Really spectacular, spared no expense. For this place, I wanted to show them something that wasn't an illusion. Something that was real.
Can anyone hear me? This is Dr. Maya Joshi. I've been left behind on Isla Nublar.
Was Jurassic Park Survival, a upcoming single-player action-adventure for PC, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series XS. This is what they show, just a little bit of gameplay, and it's going to be like a first-person perspective, and a lot of people are being really excited by this because it seems to be we're getting like a survival horror game from Jurassic Park, which is something I guess we've wanted. And even some people have pointed out on YouTube that, hey, it's a Jurassic Park game and not Jurassic World. So, hey, isn't this what we've wanted for years? And perhaps so. This looks to be very interesting. You know, it seems to be following up mainly from the original film. And we get to see some of the visitor centers been destroyed from the T-Rex and stuff like that. So, I must say that I am excited about that. That's definitely an announcement. I'm in here, I'm seeing looks like some stuff that'll be next week for the trailer park, because we're not going to really have a trailer park this week, but you know, we got some game trailers, which I'd say that the biggest one that I'm excited about might just be this one right here. It's Final Fantasy VII Rebirth theme song announcement trailer.
I'm feeling every single bullet.
Their ire manifests once more. Do not underestimate this foe.
Your foe?
Sephiroth.
What am I supposed to do? Their luck runs out, but mine doesn't. I'm the only one who gets a pass.
Sometimes, I don't even know who I am. I forget things everyone else remembers just fine. And know things I've got no right knowing.
Cloud, it's okay. You saved me before. Now it's my turn.
Is it you? You, or is it the pooch?
I'm just messing with you. That there is our man.
When fate sets us a challenge, we must rise to meet it.
Are you ready to rumble?
Aerith, is there anything I can do for you? I want to help. I want Marlene to see what her father's become.
Promise not to tell? When she wakes up, a scary man is going to kill her.
I won't say that it was fate. I won't say that it was destiny. But if not, what could it be that drew you towards me? Could it be chance?
Strength.
Now, one thing you got to say for Squaresoft, well, that's what they used to be, Square Enix. They know how to put together a trailer, and having this song here, this "No Promises to Keep," is the theme song performed by Lauren Allred, with of course the music by Nobuo Uematsu, who did the music for the games. Which, listening to the tune, it sounds a lot like some of the music we've already had, like maybe as a normally an instrumental tune, but now we've got lyrics been placed to the song. So very, very cool. Lyrics, of course, written by Kezo Shigi Nojima, and then a lyrics translation by Ben Sebin, Matt Furta, John Crow. And it looks like there's an arrangement and synthesizer programming by Tsumo Narita. But really, we get a chance to have a look at, there was a stage presentation. Let me see. Oh, like an entire performance of the theme song. I'm going to have to look into that later. So I'm definitely keeping this screen up so I can look into this, because that's a nice, I like that song. I haven't seen that it's available on Apple or Spotify or anything like that, for at least listening purposes, if you have like the Apple Music app. I just happened to find this, that apparently they did have her come to perform the song out at the Video Game Awards. I didn't watch the live program. I've heard the complaints. You know, people don't always enjoy watching the program, and it was more about new games than it is the winners and la 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 la. I don't know. So I haven't watched the actual program. I just going for the follow up. So that's okay though. That's okay. So we did get a look at Sid and various other different characters. My brain is not working. I was taking a nap and my brain is still tired. I need to go back to my nap and finish sleeping, but I really need to get this recorded for y'all. So my brain is not functional. Isn't that wonderful? But we get a look at a lot of the different characters, the emotional impact of the song with some of the footage on there. You really want to going to have to take a look at this. If you are a fan of Final Fantasy VII, if you played the remake game and enjoyed it, this is a very exciting getting a look at this. I am patiently waiting for the end of February. It was supposed to be, I think they said February 29th, like leap day or something, is the release date for this. So I'm eagerly anticipating that. I will be sharing, of course, some game footage when the game comes out with you. Of course, at the Neverland official gaming channel, which I haven't really changed the name of that, even though we've become more of the fandom nexus. But all right, it's still a Neverland gaming channel, but that's okay. We still go to Neverland every week. But anyways, I feel like I'm just babbling on here. Let me get on to the next thing that I didn't know was coming, but I think I'm interested in. It's, I guess, in a way, it's a sequel, from the look of things, to an old Super Nintendo game. Anybody remember Secret of Mana? And I believe they did some other in the series, but now this is Visions of Mana, which I don't know that there's any dialogue here. I think it's mainly just music. So let's listen for a little bit. So this is mainly music. There's a little bit of, what in the world have I got captions on, and they're in French. So I'm going to turn the volume down on this a little bit. And read for you what it says here on Square Enix's official YouTube channel. It says, for the first time in over 15 years, a brand new entry in the mainline Mana series arrives. Embark on a new adventure with Val, the newly appointed Soul Guard, as he sets off on a journey across the world to accompany his friend on her pilgrimage to the Tree of Mana. Experience action-packed gameplay and explore a vibrant semi-open 3D field, encountering fearsome foes and unlikely allies along the way. New adventure begins 2024. Now, I've never completed any of the Mana games. I played Secret of Mana on Super Nintendo, but I didn't finish it. I had borrowed it from someone. I think it was actually a boyfriend of one of, like, Philip's sisters or one of his boyfriends, right? He was big into RPGs, happy. Try a little bit of a Final Fantasy game, which I think was 3 or whatever. It was the first one on Super Nintendo, which I didn't finish that one because it went on too long. I wasn't really into the turn-based combat. And Secret of Mana, what was challenging with that, what annoyed me is, it was trying to be more of an action-based, and I was more into, like, The Legend of Zelda Link to the Past, you know, and how that plays, where you can make your sword strikes at whatever. But Secret of Mana, your sword strikes, you have to wait for your sword to recharge every time you use it, so you'd have to hit something or hope you didn't miss, and then you have to wait for it to recharge, and then you can hit again. Otherwise, it really wouldn't do any damage. And that got kind of annoying, but otherwise, I mean, it was a very, very cool game, and I would like to give another, I think I'm more patient now these days. I would like to give that another try, and they did do some sort of remake of the game of some sort, but I heard that they didn't remake it very well. I mean, they just tried to put the original game out, but something was changed that maybe shouldn't have been. I don't know. People were saying that they didn't like the re-release for Secret of Mana. And I think it was even packaged maybe with another game that's in the series. I don't know. But this is a new game and it looks really neat. You know, it's got that cutesy style of the original games, if you're familiar with it. And even some of the enemies you fight, you're like, this thing's cute. This is something I need to kill, you know? So, you know, it's something I'm thinking I might give it a try. And I don't think I'd have to be that familiar with the original stories because it's 15 years later. It's a new story. So I think it's within the same world of the Mana series, but I think I could dive in and not be confused. That's the vibe that I'm getting from this trailer, at least. So hopefully that is going to be the case. We've also got some DLC for Final Fantasy 16 that was announced. I haven't even gotten to play Final Fantasy 16. I can only afford one game at a time, and right now I'm with Christmas and things like that, I'm kind of saving my money that direction. And of course, I have to put my money in for my Final Fantasy Rebirth coming out there in February, as we already mentioned. But anyways, for those of you that have played it, I do intend to play this game. I played the demo and did enjoy it, but there's a couple of bits of DLC, some that is out. I believe Echoes of the Fallen is already out, but there's also, and they've announced The Rising Tide. So let's take a listen if clicking this was having a result. There we go. Well, it's got a reminder that this video may be inappropriate for some users. Well, I'm old enough, so we'll go ahead and watch it.
Someone's come to my attention, and I'll be damned if I know what to make of it.
Some sort of crystal.
Enlightened souls forged great and terrible weapons called the Iconoclasts, from which icons derived their name, and turned them against each other in the Magitek War.
It seems somebody's woken this place up. The question is, who?
What the hell is an Iconoclastic defense system?
I've a feeling we're about to find out.
And that we will not like the answer.
Then we better cut this short.
Welcome, my friends, to Mysidia.
The Rising Tide is supposed to be available this spring. And it basically, it doesn't say a whole lot here. It says the epic story of Final Fantasy 16 moves ever onwards. Echoes of the Fallen is out now, and the Rising Tide is coming spring 2024. And actually, if you get an expansion pass that has both, you get a special discounted price, and that is also available right now. Now, one thing I will point out, or what I'm seeing on this that is very interesting to me, is it's like they've got a little bit of sci-fi here with the look of something. I'm not sure what's going on, but this, you know, the kind of the big deal about this game was getting more back into the fantasy realm of things. And this, you know, has, it looks like something science fiction has dove into that world or something from the look of things. So I am kind of curious of what's going on with that. So I don't know what's going on, because I haven't played the game, but I do plan to. But that looks interesting. So yeah, that's definitely, it's on my radar, because I do plan on at least, you know, playing the games. Okay, so I went to a Variety to get a list of the winners, and I'm gonna do them in a reverse order from how they've presented them on here, because I think they got the biggest award at the top of the article. But let's just run through some of the winners from the Game Awards here. So best esports event went to 2023 League of Legends World Championship. I won't read all the nominees until we get up to the bigger things. I'll look at the nominees, but best esports coach is Christine Potter-Chi for Evil Geniuses Valorant. Best esports team was JD Gaming for League of Legends. I would say the best esports team would be the ones that won, though, wouldn't it? Anyways, best esports athlete, Lee Faker Sung-Hyuk for League of Legends. Best esports game, Valorant. I've never even heard of that game. It's by Riot Games. Content creator of the year, Iron Mouse. Now, I don't know exactly what they mean by a content creator. Is that like whoever's streaming the game and who they like best? I don't know. Most anticipated game, and I can agree with this, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth by Square Enix. I'll list the other nominations, which was Hades 2 from Supergiant, Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth, Star Wars Outlaws, and Tekken 8. Player's Voice, Baldur's Gate 3, Larian Studios. Now, I'm not sure exactly, you know, because they're not naming actors here. But other nominees was the Cyberpunk 2077 Phantom Liberty, Genshin Impact, Marvel Spider-Man 2 from Insomniac, obviously, and Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, which really don't have a lot of dialogue, but I guess, you know, counts as voices, right? Best multiplayer presented by Discord, Baldur's Gate 3. Best sports racing is Forza Motorsport. Best sim or strategy game went to Pikmin 4. Best family game went to Super Mario Brothers Wonder, which, yeah, it looks very cool. I don't pick up a lot of Nintendo games because Nintendo, they need to come down on price when the game gets a little older, I think. Best fighting game was Street Fighter VI. Nominees include of God of Rock, never heard of that, Mortal Kombat 1, Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl 2, and Pocket Bravery. Best RPG went to Baldur's Gate 3. It was up against Final Fantasy 16, Lies of P, Sea of Stars, which I thoroughly enjoyed, and Starfield, which has had a lot of talk over the last month or so. Best action adventure game went to The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. It went up against Alan Wake 2, Spider-Man 2, and Resident Evil 4, including also Star Wars Jedi Survivor. That's high praise. That's a, you know, I haven't played every game on that list, but that's, yeah, I've played two of the games out of the list, but those are definitely some other ones that are big and on my radar for, I'm going to play everything on this list, probably except for Tears of the Kingdom that won, because I didn't like Breath of the Wild that much. Mainly because I got tired of the weapon breaking system, and I don't know if that changed. But, you know, it's a Legend of Zelda game. I probably will end up playing it at some point. Yeah, but, of course, even waiting a long time for it to be a used game and buying it used, I'm still going to pay pretty much the same amount that it is as a full price game. What is wrong with you, Nintendo? Anyway, best action game went to Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon. They went out over Dead Island 2, Ghost Runner 2, Hi-Fi Rush, and Remnant 2. Best VR or augmented reality game, Gran Turismo 7, Humanity, Horizon Call of the Mountain, Resident Evil Village VR mode, or Synapse went to Resident Evil Village VR mode. Was that actually still just this year? Wow. Best mobile game. Ooh, you know, I need to play this Final Fantasy VII Ever Crisis. It was nominated, but the winner was Honkai Star Rail. Other nominees included Hello Kitty Island Adventure, Monster Hunter Now, and Terra Nil. Best debut any game went to Cocoon. Huh. I don't think it's linked to the movie. Other nominees, or nominees other than, you know, because Cocoon won. The nominees other than that one, of course, was Dredge, Pizza Tower, Venba, and Viewfinder. Best independent game was Sea of Stars. I did play that one. I really enjoyed that. That was free when I got it. At first, it was available for me for free. Now you're going to have to pay for it, but it's definitely worth it. Other nominees was, of course, Cocoon, Dave the Driver, Dredge, and Viewfinder. So I guess there's a difference between a debut versus best indie game. So not all these companies necessarily debuted. I guess I see Sea of Stars was not listed as a debut game, Sabotage Studio, or debut, whatever, how you're going to say it. But Sabotage Studio, I guess, has had some other stuff before. Best community support was given to Baldur's Gate 3. Best ongoing game went to Cyberpunk 2077. I guess that will include like DLC, because there was some DLC released this year. Other nominees include Apex Legends, Final Fantasy 16, Fortnite, and Genshin Impact. I've at least played most of these, or at least a demo, except for, Genshin Impact. I think I played a little bit. That's a free to play, if I remember correctly. I played a little bit. It's very, if you're into anime, I think you'd enjoy that one. Games for Impact. I don't even understand what that one, so I'm just going to move on. Innovation in Accessibility went to Forza Motorsport. It's kind of interesting what they've done with accessibility there. I'm sure with a driving game, you'd want to definitely make that more, heck, a steering wheel set would be great. Best performance went to Neil Newborn for Baldur's Gate 3, beating out Ben Starr for Final Fantasy 16, Cameron Monaghan in Star Wars Jedi Survivor, Idris Elba, holy cow, you beat Idris Elba, for Cyberpunk 2077, Phantom Liberty, Melanie Libert for Alan Wake 2, and Yuri Lowenthal, Marvel Spider-Man 2, the voice of Spider-Man in those games. So Neil Newborn beat out a lot of good competition. Best audio design, winner being Hi-Fi Rush. I've been hearing a lot of good stuff about that. They beat out over Alan Wake 2, Dead Space, Marvel Spider-Man 2, and Resident Evil 4. Best score and music, no surprise here, Final Fantasy 16, composer Masayoshi Soken. Final Fantasy has some of the best music throughout the series. Something else that has some of the best music would be a Legend of Zelda game, and that, of course, was a nominee. And, of course, Baldur's Gate 3, Alan Wake 2, and Hi-Fi Rush also getting nominations in there. But Final Fantasy 16 winning that. I'm going to lean on Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth getting that next year. Best Art Direction went to Alan Wake 2, which, for Remedy, their art direction is pretty spectacular in their games, and the things they're doing lately, the creative directions they go, is fantastic. They win over Hi-Fi Rush, Lies of P, Super Mario Brothers Wonder, and The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Whew, this just goes on. Best Narrative went to Alan Wake 2. They win over Baldur's Gate 3, Cyberpunk 2077, Phantom Liberty, Final Fantasy 16, and Spider-Man 2. Best Adaptation, the winner being The Last of Us for PlayStation Productions on HBO. This would be anything that got a series or a movie, apparently. They went out over Castlevania Nocturne, Gran Turismo, Super Mario Brothers Movie, and the Twisted Metal series. Best Game Direction goes to Alan Wake 2. Once again, Remedy Entertainment, doing a lot of amazing stuff. They went over Baldur's Gate 3, Spider-Man 2, Super Mario Brothers Wonder, and Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Game of the Year. The nominees were Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Spider-Man 2, Resident Evil 4, Super Mario Brothers Wonder, and The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. The winner this year, Baldur's Gate 3, which I've heard described as get naked and stab people. Lots of nudity and things like that. So I've been kind of hesitant to play that one. I did play through The Witcher 3, so I guess I should just go and play it. I've played a little bit of the original Baldur's Gate, and I do have it on my PC. They have, I think, made a combo pack between 1 and 2 that's available for console. Maybe I'll buy it again sometime and play through them there. I feel like I want to play the other games as well. For the PC, that PC game is really cool, and I have it. I just haven't sat and played through the whole thing for the original game, so... I'll just have to do that. And then Baldur's Gate 3, I guess I'll have to play at some point. Won't talk about it much, I guess, here. It is a little bit too far on the mature side from what I know. I mean, heck, they had a teaser or a trailer that showed, Well, a druid who can become like a bear, and then, yeah. There was a lot of talk. GameSpot had a list of what they call some of the biggest announcements that were made. Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons being remade. They remake that. I'll have to give that a try. Pony Island 2, Panda Circus, The Rise of the Golden Idol, Usual June, Harmonium the Musical, Windblown, very anime-looking type of thing, Thrasher, Dredge X, Dave the Diver. I guess that's a crossover, because Dave the Diver, I think, is something that, yeah, it was an independent hit. This is actually coming December 15th, and Dredge is a horror fishing game, which I'm kind of curious about. Exodus, God of War Ragnarok Valhalla. Sony announced free downloadable content for God of War Ragnarok Valhalla, which is a free roguelike mode where Kratos travels with Mimir to a mysterious island filled with monsters. The new mode will be available December 12th, tomorrow, at the time of this recording. I won't get this episode out until tomorrow, so... I'm not sure what they mean by roguelike, but I'll have to check into that. I think I uninstalled the game. I may have to get back in there, although I have started playing Dragon's Dogma, the original, because I guess the sequel is coming soon, and I'd never played it, and I thought maybe I'd play that probably up and through February, but I don't know. I might have to jump on God of War Ragnarok again. Anyways, Big Walk, and wow, you should see the images of Big Walk. I don't know how you explain it, but this is the same people who created the previously released Untitled Goose game. That game's not coming out till 2025. We've also got Hellblade 2, Senua's Saga, No Rest for the Wicked, which, that's Moon Studios. This is an action RPG, which is kind of a little darker than the original stuff from that. They made the Ori franchise. This looked very interesting. I think I remember seeing some footage of this. It looks cool. I don't know. That's about all I can say. Dragon Ball, Sparking Zero, a new Dragon Ball game. We've got the casting of Frank Stone. Don't know what's going on with the image, but it looks like it's going to be scary. It's apparently set in the same universe of Dead by Daylight. Visions of Mana, which we already talked about. Then OD, a long-rumored collaboration between longtime developer Hideo Kojima and Xbox. Jordan Peele was revealed as being a collaboration. He's a went from comedy to making horror movies and has been winning awards for it. This is going to be an Xbox exclusive, though. They showed some footage of filming some of their actors where they do the facial capture. It's some sort of horror game. That's about all we know. Fortnite Rocket Racing. I suppose this is a mixture of... I don't know if this has anything to do with Rocket League. I can't really see it say anything about Rocket League, but that's what it makes me think of when I think I saw some footage of that. Tales of Kinzira Zao. I don't even know what it is. They call it a Metroidvania style action platform by Sergeant Studios. Lost Records, Bloom and Rage. But here's something. Marvel's Blade. And they did have a bit of a trailer. There's some language in it, so I didn't get that. This is being produced by the same people who made Deathloop and the Dishonored franchise. And I have played a bit of Deathloop. I think I've mentioned it. It is very cool. I got stuck and I need to come back to it, but I started playing Dragon's Dogma. But I also, the looping, it was going to drive me crazy if I don't, all the stuff I do, I lose it all when I get killed. And whoo, that's some consequences for dying, and you're meant to die in that game. And yeah, it gets frustrating, but it's a very cool game. All right, other games announced. Okay, Mecha Break. Palia looks a very nice art style there in the image. Light No Fire is something to... this is the same creators of No Man's Sky, Hello Games. And, I guess there is a teaser trailer, and I think maybe I have seen it. I just don't have it because I think that there was all music, so it wouldn't have done much good in here. But it was made for all in-game footage, and it's looks to be an open-world RPG. Multiplayer, even, they're saying. Looked very nice. Stormgate, PC strategy game. Guilty Gear Strive. I don't know what Elephant or Elfelt Valentine, what that has to do with it, but that's written all off the screenshot that they have. Monster Hunter Wilds, Baldur's Gate 3 on Xbox. So I guess they didn't get it on the Xbox yet, so that will be coming very soon. But those were all the major announcements. That, according to GameSpot, that was worth knowing. So on the Game Awards. So, but yeah, so there's our coverage of the Game Awards. See, that took us half an hour, and we still got 42 minutes of show, 48 minutes of show, I think, actually. But before we get into that, I do want to remind you, heck, if you, it's probably easier to use the link. You go to neverlandpodcast.com. I've got links there for Dubby there on the front page, Dubby.gg. Use the discount code Neverland to get yourself 10% off. Dubby has energy drinks, but it's a powdered mix that you mix with water, and you can get yourself a water bottle to mix it up in. They promise this is healthy and will not give you jitters like a regular energy drink, like a Monster, where it's loaded with caffeine. So yeah, get a 10% off your order at Dubby.gg.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All righty. So now I say it is time. Let's get right into our review of Gremlins, the retro review. Not the retro rewind. It is a retro review. All righty, everybody. Emma's back for it. Another. And I got to remember what I actually titled this because I mistitled the Lord of the Rings episode. These are retro reviews, but I called last one accidentally. I typed retro rewind, but I think that's what Tim Nidell is calling his new show. And I was probably just looking at something that he's building. But retro reviews is what we call these when we review basically an old movie from a Gen Z perspective to see if these movies really are timeless or if they're just something we just love it. And we try to share it with our kids like, no, wait, you got to watch this and see what happens.
Yeah.
So we're doing it because it's Christmas and I call this a Christmas movie, even though. Oh, and I looked this up.
I think it is.
Yeah. June 8th, 1984 was when this movie came out. So it released in the summer to be a summer blockbuster movie.
That's
and
crazy.
It was. But it's really very Christmassy. To me, I rank a Christmas movie if somehow Christmas is involved in the plot. Like Christmas is a trigger.
Yeah.
Gizmo is a Christmas gift. Bingo. It happens on Christmas Eve. Die Hard, I qualify as well because it's a Christmas party that everything is launched from.
Oh,
so I call that a Christmas movie. It's actually about to be put in the theaters. I can't really cover it on this show because it's not really a family friendly. It's an R-rated action movie, but
yeah,
it's still ranked as probably one of the best action movies ever made. Mainly because Bruce Willis is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
He's just such a great character with everything he does. Anyways,
So yeah, June 8th, 1984. Now, I'll throw the folklore before I talk about some of the impacts it had on me, because I got a question for you. But I went ahead and I thought, you know, because they talk about some of the folklore of what gremlins were. You probably studied a little bit in school on this. I think we did in school talk about it.
If we did, I don't remember it at all.
Okay, well, let me hop into it. Got to get to the right tab. So this is according to Wikipedia. A gremlin is a mischievous folklore creature invented at the beginning of the 20th century to originally explain malfunctions in aircraft and later in other machinery, processes, and their operators. Depictions of these creatures vary widely. Stories about them and references to them as the causes of especially inexplicably technical and mental problems of pilots were especially popular during and after World War II. I was checking to make sure I hit the button. Use of the term in the sense of mischievous creature that sabotaged aircraft first arose in the Royal Air Force slang among British pilots stationed in Malta, the Middle East, and India in the 1920s, with the earliest printed record in a poem published in the journal Aeroplane in Malta on the 10th of April, 1929. Later sources have sometimes claimed that the concept goes back to World War I, but there is no print evidence of this. There is evidence of early RAF reference in the 1920s to a lowly menial person. I almost said mental. I had to stop myself. They might have been mental. They thought the little creatures were running around in the engines. Yeah. In other words, a low-ranking officer or enlisted man saddled with oppressive assignments. Now, I did say there's a thing there, a popularization by Roald Dahl. Mm-hmm. You might know who Roald Dahl is.
Might have heard the name.
Well, he's credited for getting the gremlins known outside the Royal Air Force. I wonder if he wrote a book on it. No, he actually, okay, so he had his own experience in an accidental crash landing in the Western Desert when he ran out of fuel in January of 1942. He was transferred to Washington, D.C. as an assistant air attaché at the British Embassy. And he wrote his first children's novel, The Gremlins, in which gremlins were tiny men who lived in RAF fighters. In the same novel, Dahl called the wives of gremlins Fifinellas, their male children Widgets, and their female children Fibbergibbets. Well, he was good at coming up with fun, weird words like Oompa Loompa.
Oh.
If I say Oompa Loompa, you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Willy Wonka.
This is the guy who wrote Willy Wonka, the BFG, which Disney made a movie of, the Big Friendly Giant, which I don't think that movie doesn't get enough credit. I thought it was great.
It was so good.
I liked it. It was
I watched it one time. It's been a while. I might have to rewatch, but it was
also
so good.
James and the Giant Peach, which I think I need to watch again because I watched it. I don't think I caught everything out of it when the first time I watched it.
I might have watched that when I was younger. I don't remember.
Yeah, it's one of the ones I think I need to give it another try because I remember kind of falling asleep. But I've listened to another podcast, kind of compared that to the book and everything. I was like, you know, this wasn't such a bad story. It's weird. But Roald Dahl was a prolific children's author and he had big issues with television because he said, no, kids should be reading books and I'll write them for them, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, he grew up with radio and probably, you know, because you can still use your imagination with radio. And I felt the TV, you know, you don't have any imagination in there. And, you know, he's kind of got a point, you know. So I think that's why he has the character Mike TV there. He's like, that's one of the bad kids as he watches TV. So, yeah. That's so Roald Dahl kind of popularized it here in the States. So and one of the funny other things, you notice this was a Warner Brothers release. There's a classic Bugs Bunny cartoon with a gremlin that gets on a plane with Bugs Bunny. And that's one of the few times that Bugs Bunny is being tormented by something. Normally Bugs Bunny is like, oh, you're trying to hunt me. I'm going to have fun with you. But this is something that messes with Bugs Bunny and actually comes to a pretty fun ending. Because only Bugs Bunny could get away with, gravity not working because he ran out of gas. So, but yeah, so gremlins have kind of been around in the zeitgeist in their own way. And so, of course, when I was a kid, I'd never heard all this stuff.
Yeah.
So what were your expectations going into this?
I wasn't really sure. You told me that it's at first it seems scary, but then it gets fun. But you said it was like, it seems scary at first, but then it's funnier.
Mm-hmm.
I halfway through I had to pause because I did not agree with the sounds that they made. They were nasty. It was like, I don't know. I just don't like, I have a noise sensory issue. I don't like certain noises.
Those provided by Frank Welker, by the way.
I loved Gizmo. He was. I just wrote Gizmo with a heart. I love Gizmo.
See, that's
so cute.
The reason why I asked, like, first impressions, what you might have been thinking going in is when this movie was coming out. I didn't see the trailers. The trailers really didn't even show any creatures. I mean, you got like little bits of something, but you didn't get an idea. But I didn't see the trailers as a kid. I saw TV commercials that didn't show anything. So when this movie came out and it was the beginning of summer, we were just launching summer break. We went to Hardee's, and Hardee's had they had a series of five records that were parts of the story. Like we used to have read-along records, record and book kind of things. So Hardee's had a little like window clings on their windows, and Gizmo and driving a car, nothing cute stuff. So we're like, this is a cute, that's what this movie is. We should go see that. So my brother and I went actually to the Hardee's used to be right over here near Antioch Mall. And so right across the street from that was used to be a movie theater, which is now, is that a dollar store? Yeah, there's family, there's the Dollar Tree, but there's, it's a dollar store now there next to Fantastic Sam's. That used to be a movie theater when we were kids. And so my brother and I went in there, and they only had two screens. One screen was showing Pete's Dragon. The other one was showing Gremlins. And my mom even asked my brother and I, which would you rather see? You want to see Pete's Dragon or Gremlins? Now, the reason why I mentioned this, I didn't see Pete's Dragon until I was an adult, for one. But we went in there. But when Gremlins turned to a scary scene, the whole kitchen thing, I remember looking at my brother and says, maybe we should have gone to Pete's Dragon. I was terrified. Didn't know that about 5 minutes later, I'd be laughing my head off.
Yeah, it was so funny.
So we had expectations that were completely thrown for me.
Yeah.
Because it even starts out cute. Knowing that it's something, because you'd seen what the Gremlins were going to look like, apparently. Because you said you didn't like the look of something. I've seen like
pictures here and there, but yeah.
So you knew that was like coming. So were you kind of half wondering, like, okay, well, this is going to go bad any minute now?
I don't know. I don't think I was like really expecting whatever happened.
You knew something was like, okay, there's supposed to be some sort of horror thing coming up here.
Yeah, yeah, because he was told not to feed them after midnight. And he did it anyway.
Yeah.
So I was like, ooh.
He kind of got set up.
It was like an anticipation thing, because it was just like waiting to see what would happen.
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
Yeah, and that the first part of the movie, and it's, one of the things I appreciate is setting up the small town. Now, the fun part is, and this probably didn't click for you. The first time you see Kingston Falls, you have this nice wide shot when the title comes up. Was there anything about that that looked familiar?
No.
All right. Well, it didn't click. Because the fun part is you just watched the movie that was filmed after this was filmed on that same set, Back to the Future. The town square there. And if you look even at the opening shot on Gremlin, when they have the title up, you can kind of see where the clock tower is. You can see some of the pillars. But they, you know, had that town square where the Christmas trees are being sold kind of in the middle of it, but that's that same set that's on Universal's lot that they also did Back to the Future and a bunch of other films.
Oh, now that you say that,
now you're like, oh.
Now I'm thinking back to when he was walking through. I was like, it did look familiar.
The main, other than neighborhoods, the main area of all the stuff you saw in town was around on that town square.
I'd forgotten about
that. I remember that now, too, now that you mentioned it, because I've seen all of those, and once you said that, I'm like, yeah, it does. It does ring a bell now. Now I was like, why does this all look so familiar? But yeah, Gremlins is one of my favorites. And yes, it is a Christmas movie and Gizmo's my favorite.
Yes.
He's so cute.
In fact, the funny thing is Gizmo. and this will be another big clue thing for her. Heather's been trying to figure out what to get me for Christmas. And I've dropped several hints that for years, and Target has had this, they have a little singing Gizmo that sings his little, and he does a little dance. I'll get into the toy things here later, though, because holy cow, there were toys.
Oh, yeah, I've seen.
Back in the day, by Christmas time.
I assume they would be little toys for Gizmo.
Especially Gizmo.
He's so cute. That's all I have to say about him. He's so cute.
He was adorable. And it's amazing how they did this, because you had a series of different puppets. Of course, you can tell some hand puppets they could use, because they had a large Gizmo head to get those tight shots where it was more animated. He could express and all this stuff. They had a smaller one that was slightly limited, who worked a little bit like the Doozers in Fraggle Rock, which you'd have no idea what I'm talking about.
But no.
My listeners will know the Doozers from Fraggle Rock.
Good for them.
But, you know, but a lot of simple stuff. The guy's name was Carl, I think, Salis. He was the one who designed all the puppets and everything.
Yeah, I think I wrote a note somewhere about, like, I was kind of curious on how, like, they came to make the Gremlins and Gizmo and all that, because that looks really interesting to me.
It's amazing. Well, Steven Spielberg was producer on this, and he was known for effects.
I think I saw his name pop up a couple times in the credits, maybe about three, four times.
And you did see, you know, the Amblin Entertainment logo comes up at the end of the credits. This might have been the first film, I think, that was put out as an Amblin. It's not the first time he was a producer. There's also a new movie name called Poltergeist, maybe next Halloween if you've never seen it.
Oh,
Poltergeist terrified me as a child. I can watch it as
I'll
an adult and enjoy
horror
it.
Movie. I love horror movies.
her dad, Ryan, is shaking his head. That
He's
movie,
afraid of snakes.
Why did it have to be snakes?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I appreciate they probably would had to have gone through a lot of different dogs that would react well to the puppet. And not just bark at it, because you notice a few times Barney comes over and licks the ear or whatever. He's just like, he took it as this real, and it was his little friend.
No.
Completely real to the
so
dog.
Cute.
So I'm sure the one part that wasn't quite real, I think Barney kind of barks when he's hung up on the Christmas lights, which is one of your first clues that something's wrong.
Yes, I saw that. And I remember
one thing I've observed, and I haven't watched, there's an animated series that's on Max now where they try to give some backstory to Mogwai's, which what's the problem I have with it is they're calling him Gizmo. And no, he didn't get the Gizmo until Randall Peltzner named him Gizmo because he seemed to like to tinker with my inventions, you know, that kind of thing, which was your first indication that they were smarter than they seem. Did you find your note?
Yeah, it just says Barney hanging
You're like, how'd that happen? So
I kind of knew they were sitting in that little box gossiping.
Yes, you knew they were up to no good.
They were gossiping.
Yeah, well, what I've taken to notice is Gizmo seems to be the rare exception to Mogwai. They might all be mischievous because he knows it's trouble when as soon as he's wet. And he springs out the five others.
Yeah.
He knows because he's over there.
Like so many times. Uh-oh. And I was like, oh, he's so cute. He reminds me of a toddler. I want one.
Everybody wanted one. Except
I literally said as soon as I saw him pop up, I was like, I want one. My friend was sitting right there. I was like, I want one.
Yes. But Gizmo seems to know if he multiplies, the other Mogwai are not going to have his same disposition.
Mm-hmm. They all have different personalities. I wrote that in my notes on my phone.
Yeah.
They all have different.
Not as much as if you ever want to sit and watch Gremlins 2, they're even more variants of personalities, and they even did different looks for them. And and Gremlins 2 kind of makes fun of the first movie because there's stuff that if you tried to think on it, doesn't make any sense. And they make fun of it. And it's funny that way. And it's more laugh. And Heather actually likes the second one better because it doesn't have any scary moments to it whatsoever.
It's just funny. It's just funny.
It's just silly. Because really, when you look at the Gremlins, they're just cartoon characters with reptilian skin, which you don't think of. I did notice though watching this time, because I do have a dark sense of humor. Did you catch there were some occasional things that, okay, I see how that's funny. Like when the mom's upstairs and suddenly the songs, particularly, do you hear what I hear? Because literally she's hearing something. It's like, am I hearing that? I'm alone in this house. Why am I hearing this? It's funny in a weird way.
I wrote a note for her and all I said was girl boss.
Yeah, she whoops some butt.
Uh-huh.
Don't mess with Mrs. Peltzner.
She ate that up. Peltzer.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of gross. That whole scene is really nasty.
I think I wrote several times. I kept writing you. Because just like anything that came from them was nasty looking.
Yeah. Which is a fun part. Something else I looked up. Yeah. So Steven Spielberg had a little bit of trouble with Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Because there was no such thing as PG-13. And he wrote The Edge, and he was really wanting that PG because he wanted families to be able to go see Temple of Doom. Have you ever seen that one?
No, but I've heard of it.
Okay. You've heard of, like, guys goes and the villain can pull your heart out of your chest.
Really?
Yeah, it's freaky, man. And it's kind of it's dark for an Indiana Jones. And it's my least favorite of the originals. I don't consider the other two worth watching. So we'll leave those be. They don't exist. The three original Indiana Jones, watch all day. Temple of Doom kind of got under fire for it's pushing the edge. And Spielberg was afraid he almost got an R with that one. Gremlins was on the same thing because they did stuff. It did have appeal to kids after you get past the scariness. It definitely had an appeal to kids. But there were a lot of groups that were like, it was kind of violent there. So HBO Family, when it started airing, it would edit out the violent parts. So which I would say probably most of that kitchen scene, you don't get to see the gremlins exploding in microwaves.
Oh, I did like see.
That. Yeah. But as it was edited, shown in HBO Family, they took that stuff out. But it was 2 months after Gremlins came out that the MPAA finally listened to Spielberg and came up with PG-13. So you'd have something in between PG and R.
Well, now the first time I watched it was on cable. I saw it at my cousin's house. They did not edit it because cousin was telling me about,
HBO Family came along later.
Microwave and all that stuff. Like, I had a cousin that would tell the whole thing and, like, no, we saw it all.
Yeah, and I saw it all in a theater because, PG, you were allowed a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I did write. I wrote, that was brutal.
Yeah.
That's all I wrote. That was brutal.
That was brutal.
It was funny, but brutal.
Yeah, because at least the movie let you know.
Like that movie.
That movie did let you know that the movie was having a sense of humor, because you have the sword every time they close the door, they would fall off the wall. Little things that would be kind of funny. Uh-huh. And but then the humor does turn dark, because the two things I realized have some dark humor is that, do you hear what I hear? Darkly, that's funny.
Yeah, I remember laughing a little bit when that started playing. I was like, that's really funny. Also, and, great song.
And the professor, the biology teacher with the syringe in his backside.
Yeah.
Darkly funny, if you think about it. It was like, because yeah. He's like, oh, you're not, and I love the way that he sets it up before he sticks his hand with a candy bar under the desk. He says, oh, you're not still mad about that little blood test, are you? Yes, he was.
He was very mad.
So it's dark. As a kid, I didn't get dark humor, but I've got a dark sense of humor now. Mm. Heather doesn't. She doesn't always get my dark humor. But yeah, it's darkly funny.
Yeah.
The other thing we didn't get. Now, did you recognize Mrs. Deagle when she showed up later in the movie?
When the gremlins came to her house?
Yes. You did catch that was Mrs. Deagle.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. See, when I was a kid, without her wig and hat, no idea that was supposed to have been her.
I knew.
But I was a kid. I didn't realize. I mean, they even show you the sign out front that this is Beagle's real estate. Mm-hmm. This is her home.
I don't think I wrote much about her. I think at first I thought she was funny, and then she wasn't funny anymore.
Yeah, she's horrible. She's so mean. What is funny is there was a TV show called Alice at the time, and she was on that as a waitress, and she made popular this phrase, well, kiss my grits. And she's a very funny actress. Uh-huh. But given they gave her this rotten character to play, but it's one of those things, every small town has to have one.
Yeah.
As I think ever since It's a Wonderful Life, which is funny story on It's a Wonderful Life. It's playing, of course. The mother's watching it as she's shopping. I don't know how many onions. She's got way too many onions.
Yeah.
When he walks in. But I learned actually something. It's a Wonderful Life for a while, because of how copyright work, was one of the movies that it kind of fell out of its own public domain kind of early and didn't get fixed up for a long time. So everybody, every Christmas, every TV station could show it for free. So It's a Wonderful Life was showing constantly on television stations. Of course, and where the mom's crying is at the end, the super happy ending there is where she's like crying. But yeah. I think it's because she's got a mound of onions about this high. And I'm like, what is she making?
Yeah, I was going to say I could watch that movie with my parents, but I don't want to watch it with my parents because I talk a lot, because I like to make little notes to myself when I'm watching movies and shows. And then he gets all mad at me. He's like, stop talking. And I'm like, but I need to make notes. Okay. Need to make verbal notes on this scene.
I don't know if you would have been familiar, though. Speaking of actors and actresses pop in this, did you make a note of Pete at all?
Who?
Okay. You're not probably familiar with Corey Feldman.
No.
Okay. Yeah, I know your dad is like, what? Corey Feldman, I mean, he grew up with us. He was one of the Goonies. One of her earliest things he is, have you ever seen The Fox and the Hound?
Yes, it was my favorite show.
I believe he's Todd, isn't he? Yeah, he's the voice of Todd as a pup. That's Corey Feldman. Later, I mean, he did a lot of movies with his other guy, Corey Haim, as he got older. He also was the voice of Donatello in the first of the Ninja Turtle movies from 1990. I don't know that he's really done anything here lately, but he was like a big child actor that grew up.
That. I loved The Fox and the Hound.
Okay, but yeah, so Corey Feldman was, who played Pete, child actor who kind of grew up. I think he's sort of retired from the limelight. He actually, I think, put out like a few albums. Like, he was trying to put a band together. He was known for hanging out with Michael Jackson even back in the day. There's even some video where he had a little glove and he's dancing with Michael Jackson. He actually could do a lot of Michael Jackson's moves from the 80s. So, yeah, Corey Feldman became kind of a big deal.
Wow.
Some of the other casts that family-friendly podcast, how to get into this. But there's something that I find funny, even though I've never seen this movie, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I am familiar with the scene.
They have it on Netflix. I saw it the other day.
You watched the whole thing?
No, okay. I saw it on Netflix somewhere.
I don't do R-rated comedies, but I am familiar with a scene where this was after Gummins, but Phoebe Cates, who played Kate, Judge Reinhold, who plays kind of the jerk, yuppie guy at the bank, who's like, well, I'm 23, I'm going to be a billionaire, all this stuff.
Oh,
that guy. So that's Judge Reinhold.
Gerald, right?
Yeah, Gerald. Nice catch, because he's only in that one little bit. He doesn't come back the rest of the movie. I don't know why.
Remember that scene because I remember laughing at it.
So Fast Time at Ridgemont High, he sees Phoebe Cates' character in that red bikini in a pool, goes into the restroom and fantasizes about her coming out of the pool and taking the top off. And that's where I'm going to leave that from what I know of that scene. She's more known for that than in Gremlins. I'd prefer to think of her in Gremlins. Because that's the try to pure being that I'm trying to be. But that's kind of, it's a pop culture thing. It has to kind of be mentioned, but it's, I find it funny that he's in the movie and he's also creeping on her in Gremlins as he is in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah.
Because he's just like, when you come see my apartment, and you never did see my apartment. I love her comeback on that. I didn't see your old one either.
I loved her. I think I wrote like one note about her.
What's the note?
That she was pretty. Because I was like, she has like, she has like a nice facial structure. I don't know. I remember making a note that she was pretty.
See, the note I would have put, because this is the one part of the movie that annoys me.
What?
Did it make any sense for her to have this issue with Christmas? And did we need this scene of this horrible story about her father?
I literally paused when they were walking and she's talking about the suicide rates during Christmas. I paused, looked at my friend. And I said, there was no reason for that.
Yeah.
Absolutely none.
And then you get her reasons for not liking Christmas later. But that really makes her entire character based on the fact that she doesn't like Christmas because her father had the tragic accident.
I didn't understand it because they didn't really put it into the plot that much. It got brought up twice. And that was about it.
I mean, I can see maybe they're trying to develop some character. But if that somehow or another, her thing against Christmas would have come up to be helpful or something to come back in an important way instead of just being this real downer, it would have made sense. But in Gremlins 2, they make fun of this. They have a little scene where she's like, oh, don't even talk presidents to me. Remember once one time where me and my mother were sitting on a bench at a park and this guy, he looked just like Abraham Lincoln. He walked up and he said, hello, little girl. And that's as far as she gets because somebody pulls her right out of there. So, and that's their way of making fun of how stupid that was. Like, she doesn't like presidency because you don't get the whole story of Abraham Lincoln, but she's starting to tell this and then somebody just pulls her right out.
That is so funny.
See, Gremlins 2, it really does make fun of it. They even have a guy who's like, well, wait a minute. What if you're on an airplane and he started eating something, but then he crossed the date line and now it's after midnight and he's still eating it? Mm. Or what if he got a crumb in there and then he swallowed the crumb after that? Now, he didn't eat that before. You know, they have a whole lot of things that people are questioning Billy about after he's trying to tell him, whether it goes wrong.
I like his hair. His hair looks really soft. I want to know how he got it like that.
One other thing you probably didn't catch, it's a little fun Easter egg, is, okay, so you see, because Billy's, trying to be an artist, cartoonist, and you see occasionally he's drawing something.
Uh-huh.
Well, he's showing his drawings actually to the guy who made those drawings at one point.
Oh.
Do you know the name Chuck Jones? You ever seen How the Grinch Stole Christmas?
Yes.
Chuck Jones was the director of that. He made several Looney Tunes. He did a lot of Tom and Jerry with Hanna-Barbera. He's basically the one, most of those Bugs Bunny, those Roadrunner cartoons, Chuck Jones.
My brother loves those Roadrunner cartoons.
Yeah, Chuck Jones definitely had his own sort of style, but that's actually Chuck Jones there you see in the bar that Billy's showing his art to. They just give him a cameo just because he drew the stuff that you were going to see that Billy was supposed to be drawing. Chuck Jones drew that for them. He's passed away, unfortunately, but he was one of the greatest animators. I still like to say one of the top animators was Iwerks. I mean, he's the guy that, sure, Walt Disney came up with Mickey Mouse into the first drawings, but Iwerks is the one who animated those early Mickey Mouse ones, and they're brilliant. So Iwerks is still my top. Chuck Jones has got to be number two. And I've got to agree, actually, I was watching a video just before, another guy, not Gil Kean, because that was the one with Family Circus, but Glenn Kean. One of the animators who worked at Disney, he did some of the early stuff, and then he was supervising animator in some of the 90s with some of the films. Brilliant animator. But yeah, the Kean family are all great artists, I guess. That's just the thing that, besides creating Family Circus, which I think was his father, maybe. I don't remember. It's something like that. Yeah. Little side note. But yeah, so one of the greatest animators actually has this little cameo in that movie.
That's really cool.
All right. So now, at what point for you did you feel like the movie... After, of course, it became a horror movie for a while, all the way up to at least Stripe jumping in the pool. Because then you think, oh, my gosh, we're in for it.
I wrote a little thing about that scene. I said the pool scene was super cool.
Yeah.
That was like the smoke and all that. That was really cool.
The effects were cool.
Yeah.
And you have that. I love the little sound they have. That they would even do.
Yeah.
Even as Stripe is dying at the end. But so at what point did you realize this was going to become full on comedy? What was the scene that you started laughing out loud at?
I don't think I started actually laughing at anything until Ms. Deagle flew out the window.
So it took you that long to get to there, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there was like little bits and pieces here that were like funny. I wrote a note about like their little giggles and their little laughs are really funny because it reminds me of my sister. I got a gizmo in my house. Her name's Lily.
There you go. The fun part is you're given some clues. It's like, I should have brought on all this stuff, but the Futtermans, you know, the Billy's next door neighbor.
I was trying to remember their names. Yeah.
Like Murray, if I remember correctly, in like the 60s was famous for doing a lot of Westerns, and she was actually a big star, the wife, in like the 50s. So they were old Hollywood. I didn't know until like when I covered this movie actually a long time ago on the podcast, probably season two or something, long time ago. But they were actually big Hollywood, so having them as a couple is fun. But the first clue, all right, when he goes outside and there's a noise and you see her eyes going this little side to side, there's something the way she did it was funny that you're like, oh, hey, ready? We're about to turn gears. But what would have been something horrible when they bust out in that bulldozer would have been like, oh, no. The theme song comes in called The Gremlin's Rag, which is this weird, mischievous, goofy thing song. When that starts playing, it's like giving you permission to say, isn't this kind of cartoonish? And it gives you permission to say, actually, no, this is funny. Yes, they're horrible little monsters, but they're mischievous, horrible little monsters.
I remember laughing out loud when they're about to get run over or whatever. And he was like, I told you they were real or whatever.
Yeah.
He said,
it's a gremlin in my bulldozer. Yes.
Yeah. I was like, that's really funny. Cause he was talking about it at the beginning. And I was like, this just sounds like an old man rambling. Cause he wants to ramble.
You think he's a crazy old man, but I was like,
he's really funny.
You'll be happy to know Gremlins 2, they're back. They survived the bulldozer.
Oh yeah. I remember don't having that question the whole time. I was like, are they okay? They never elaborated if they were okay or not.
Yeah. Yeah, because when the call goes into the sheriff's office, they just talk about a horrible accident.
So I'm just like,
I don't think the intention of the movie was that for them to have survived that, because really they're pinned, they're up against the corner of the house, but they're around there, and it's kind of fun because they come, because the second movie takes place in New York, and Mrs. Futterman, you know, they come to visit Billy in New York. We hear you're a big, you know, art designer up here. We want to come visit New York. And Mrs. Futterman tells him, okay, we're not allowed to talk about it ever since the, because Mr. Futterman went and got put in a nut house for a little while because no one believed him. You even see at the end of the first Gremlins that the reporter's like, they're talking about little green man, you know.
Yeah,
so he's gone nuts, and of course he's telling everybody. So he ended up in the nut house for a while, apparently. But he gets his payback on them gremlins in the second movie. So yes, the Futtermans, because they're kind of a lovable couple of people. The only character you see get it,
kooky couple. Yeah. I like them.
So I'm glad they survived, but Mrs. Deagle is the one that I think kind of deserved it.
Yeah, yeah. I think what made me really dislike her is her threatening an animal.
Yeah,
don't do that.
For doing what a dog is, you know, because when Billy offered to pay her back for the thing, and a decent person would be like, okay, all right, I don't expect you to have to be able to pay it all at once, but she's not a decent person. She's like, I want the dog. I'll take him to the shelter. It'll be quick. She's horrible.
Yeah.
So she's the one, when she goes flying out, you can laugh at that. She gets out the window.
I started like cackling. I was like,
right along with the little gremlins that were cackling at the same time.
I felt like them in that moment.
I kind of actually love it. She knows how horrible a person she is, because after they're caroling at her, which is hilarious, you know, they close the door. They've come for me, but I'm not ready to go. She's thinking demons have come to drag her to hell. Clearly. I was like, well, obviously you think you deserve it because you've been horrible. Time for you to repent, because you're going to get on that chair and that's it.
Just the way that she flew out the window was just really. And then like the officers was like, was that Miss Deagle? Just like, and they just drive off. They want nothing to do with it.
And they even managed to make it kind of funny when they see, I forgot the name, guys on like Charlie, who he plays Santa every year. What's he got all over him? And the deputy's over there like, can we start the car? I'd really like to go now. Can we start the car? You know, because I'd really like to go back to the station.
Yeah.
You know, this little freak out panic as the guy's been over, this one gremlin's in the window. Nah, 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 nah. It's kind of ridiculous.
It is. So. It's really funny.
But they managed to make it cartoony. There is one of the other things I think is hilarious. It is the one that's sitting there, you know, messing with the traffic lights to make them both green. And you hear the crash off camera. And he's but as they go into that shot, when they're moving down to get them playing with the wires, if you look, the smoke that's coming off of the wires is reversed. So I guess the shot might have been a pull away that they decided it looked better if it was zooming into the gremlin. But if you look real close, you can see some of the smoke they've put in there that's supposed to be coming off the wires going downward.
Oh.
Little kind of fun Easter egg that it's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, with like little things like that, you got to really look for those.
Yes. So. But where this movie really goes off the rails hilarious is when we get to Dory's Tavern.
I wrote a couple notes.
What's your notes?
I wrote the scenes of them drinking a spaghetti at the bar had me roll. I was rolling mm-hmm. on my bed. It was so funny. I had to pause because I was laughing so hard. And then that's when I wrote they all have their personality, like their own little personality.
Yeah, they'd all show up and be different.
Oh, and then I wrote Disco Gremlin.
That's not disco. That's a breakdancer.
I didn't know what
look it up. Look it up in the '80s and learn about breakdancing. And you can tell breakdancing from the backspin was like one of those moves.
I remember watching it and I was like, how can a gremlin do that? But I can't.
It's one of those acquired skills. I mean, breakdancing was big though in the '80s.
At a party and impress people. Yeah. I'll call it the gremlin.
There you go. They actually wrote a song for that. So that song that's playing right there is very specific for that. And if you look in the credits, it's Gremlin Dance Magic or something. Dance Madness. I forgot who the credited, but yeah, that song was written just for that little bit. But yeah, it's kind of fun. It's like any gag they could think of, they just threw it into that one scene with the Ray Charles one. I like to go because he looks like Ray Charles. He's sitting there and turning on the radio. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you got the guy in the hat. I love the guy in the hat. The best part of that for me is the one that comes over the puppets to annoy the guy in the hat. And the guy hits him with the cartoonish hammer.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. That whole entire scene was just like funny. And then, you know, Kate trying to get out or whatever.
Yeah. Now, here's the one thing that I call it a mistake. You see one gremlin. When we first get in there, he's already got three cigarettes lit. When Kate's going to figure out that they don't like light, she's trying to light him another set of three cigarettes, but he's backing away from the light.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did he get those first three cigarettes lit?
Yeah, I actually, you know, when I got to the bar, I didn't really think about that too deep. I was just like, huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I call that a bit of a goof.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just kind of go with it.
I mean, the rest of the movie's pretty good.
Yeah, you really can't take a lot of this movie seriously. Except for the weird downer moment of her father dying in the accident of trying to be Santa. That's a downer. But really, don't take this movie seriously.
Why would you even think that was a good idea to climb in your chimney like that? Why? In what world?
Yeah.
I mean, my dad chooses to not have hair most of the time, and I don't think he would even choose to climb down our chimney now.
Yeah.
No.
It's one of them things. Well, have you ever heard there's a comedy song called There's Something Stuck in the Chimney? Or There's Something in the Chimney?
Mm.
It's a comedy group, and it's an album called Twisted Christmas that came out, I think, like late 80s or something. Uh-huh. It's the same one. If you ever hear The Restroom Door Said Gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other ones? There's stuff that they play on the radio. The Christmas stations, whatever, they'll play some of their stuff.
Huh.
But they'll sometimes play There's Something in the Chimney. And we don't know what it is, but it's been there since last Christmas. And then by like the end line of the song is like, I'll be waiting up for Santa like I did last year, but my brother said he's already here. Because Santa got stuck in there to me. I have a dark sense of humor.
It's funny.
Yes. I have a dark sense of humor. So my other favorite thing besides, of course, the bar is getting into the theater when they're watching Snow White.
I thought that was so funny. That was my favorite scene out of everything. Milk Duds. They said that a couple times, and then them singing along. I was like, dude, they should have casted them in the Snow White movie.
That would have been awesome.
What are they doing?
Snow White and the Seven Gremlins.
Yeah. Maybe more than seven.
The two bits of that they're like my favorites is you have one who's sitting there and he's watching the movie like this, and you see a gremlin kind of walk by. He just kind of looks at him, go by, no big deal. But then you see immediately after is nothing but like a cartoonish hammer as another gremlin's just going to thump him in the head for no good reason.
There's like one that like they kept throwing stuff while they were trying to watch the movie, and I was like, huh, gremlins are a lot nicer than human beings would be.
They're kind of unruly theater patrons.
Theater, they get mad at you.
Yeah, gremlins are kind of unruly, and we've been in some movies with some unruly teenagers. The Haunting in Venice comes to mind. Yeah, so they're acting like the worst people in theater that you've actually have probably been in a theater with. So
they're so funny.
Yeah, and I even a little throw in that I think is also funny is the one that's wearing Mickey Mouse ears.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
I don't know why that makes me giggle every time. It's like, where did he get those? I don't know.
I have no idea. Don't question them.
Another fun bit that I don't know if you would have caught how funny this would have been, how clever this was. Okay, so Steven Spielberg, Amblin Entertainment, mm-hmm. also Warner Brothers, was distributing.
Uh-huh.
So now Spielberg, of course, didn't direct. It was directed by Joe Dante, written by Chris Columbus, who would later go on to direct Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, Home Alone, stuff like that.
I love Harry Potter.
Chris Columbus, great filmmaker. I like his two Harry Potter movies best.
I could talk about Harry Potter for hours.
I'm sure. In one particular scene, when they get to Montgomery Ward, which was my second job ever, was working at Montgomery Ward in the paint department at the Metro North Mall. Monkey Wards, that's right. When they're in the Montgomery Ward and you have the shot that pans across the toy section,
mm-hmm.
you see, of course, Bugs Bunny plushes and Sylvester plushes. And before Stripe pokes his head out, you see a plush of E.T. Now, have you ever seen E.T. the Extraterrestrial?
No, I'm going to guess that's probably no. I've seen pictures here and there.
Okay. Well, there's a scene in E.T. the Extraterrestrial where E.T.'s hiding from their mother, and he hides in the plush toys and pretends to be a toy. So that little shot was kind of a nod to E.T. They put an E.T. toy amongst all the plushes.
That's
where Stripe is hiding. So it's kind of a fun, cute little nod, and I appreciate because E.T. is one of my all-time movies. That it's one of the ones that's the best, but I can't watch it all the time because it tears me up. Gremlins, fortunately, is one of the, I'm trying to steer it back. Gremlins is fortunately one of the movies I can watch every year and enjoy it every time. Despite it is traumatic, even when Stripe's last skeleton comes out. It's traumatic.
Yeah,
watch this now.
I found that really, really disgusting.
Yeah, it's a lot of gross out stuff.
But again, I don't like some of the sounds that there was either.
And I wanted to get back onto that. So Frank Welker, Howie Mandel, I think did the voice of Gizmo in this one before he was really famous, but he got known for his voice. He did the second one, but he used to use that voice on a cartoon he did called Bobby's World because it was this voice he would kind of tell stories on his kid. Doing the voice, which I think he was Gizmo originally, but all the other creatures was Frank Welker. Frank Welker, if you look him up, has voiced nearly every creature since the 60s and everything from Futurama being the weird little whatever. What's the guy's
name?
That's
such a weird profession.
Yeah, but he's also Fred and Scooby-Doo. He played Ray Stantz in the Real Ghostbusters cartoon. He has voiced so many characters. He's even got to be Garfield at one point for an animated series.
I love Garfield.
If you look Frank Welker up, he is... speaking of Transformers, Megatron. That was Frank Welker. Welker is one of the greatest voice actors of all time. I would rank him above Mel Blanc just because he can do weird animal and creature voices. He can do animal voices that you'd believe. He's Aku, not Aku. That's Apu. What's the name of the monkey in Aladdin? Abu. He's Abu, the monkey. Because he can do creature voices. I mean, he's older than dirt now.
Very, very talented. I will give him that.
Yes.
I just have... Again, sensory issues. Yeah.
Like the Gremlins' voices. I guess they're supposed to be horrid.
Well, I didn't just mind their voices all that much. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Oh, not so much the voices, but the squelchy noises.
I said for that is I just didn't like the noises. Other than that, I did think the Gizmo Caca thing was really funny. I wrote that down. I wrote the quote. I didn't say anything else but the quote. It was funny.
You actually, I only noticed, I think, this time, despite having watched this so many times, the gremlin, before you even get a good look at them, that's running around the biology classroom, because he bumps into a thing as he runs past, and you see something get knocked over. Mm-hmm. You hear a thump. So he's hurt himself, and you actually hear him go, caca. So it's basically like, his caca would be poop. So it's kind of like, in Star Wars, poodoo. It's the same. When they yell poodoo, you know what they mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
as those who have heard the Dr. Demento song, Shaving Cream, Be Nice and Clean. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a song. It's funny. Trust me. It's a joke. Oh, he stepped in a big pile of shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Yes. You get the idea, I'm sure. So yeah, when they go caca, you know what they're trying to,
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's funny. Where did he learn the word caca? I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe they're smarter than human beings are. Yeah. I have no idea.
They're smarter than we think because, they actually set up because what I find interesting, and maybe I never picked up on until I was watching it again this morning, going back to Barney getting strung up on the Christmas lights. It's right after Randall Peltzer, the dad, is saying, I bet these could replace the family dog. And of course, I love how the way Barney is like, but Stripe hears that. It's like, oh, replace the family dog? Okay. Well, they string up the dog. Interesting. So that night after he says that's when they string up Barney. They know English. They, of course, and we show the Gizmo knows Chinese as well.
They're literally just like little children.
Mm-hmm.
But worse.
Mean little children.
If they could get worse. If children could get worse, that's what they would be.
The other part that almost kind of gets me though every time on this one. Hi, Billy. Oh, it's so cute.
The ending.
Just melts me.
The ending. I cried a little. Oh. Just a tiny bit. I was like, no, not Gizmo.
Yeah, he's got to go.
Bring him back.
Well, they did. In fact, while doing a quick follow-up on this to make sure I had all the directors and whatnot, Gremlins 3 might finally happen. They've been hinting to try to get a Gremlins 3 for the longest time, and they've talked to Zach, the actor who played Billy, and they're actually really close to finally getting a Gremlins 3. Because Gizmo's still around.
Ooh.
And as the animated series that's on Max right now shows, that Gizmo was very ancient. He's been around since, I forgot what time period. I probably need to rewatch the first episode. But that's the one thing that bothered me in the first episode. It's a cute little cartoon, but I guess they're not taking everything to account because they call him Gizmo, and he shouldn't have that name. Nobody would have had, this is supposed to be in China even, they would not have had the word Gizmo anyway. And he gets the name from Randall Peltzer. He should have had a little Mogwai name. Would have been neat to kind of learn that name, but I guess they wanted to sell everybody to know, yes, this is Gizmo. So overall, recommend your generation?
Oh, yeah. I think that's one I would definitely.
Become like, a new Christmas tradition?
You should take some time and watch it with family or something. It's really funny.
Are you interested enough to watch the sequel? Although the sequel's kind of dumb, and it's ranked lower, but it's funny.
Probably, yeah.
Because it is available on Max, and so.
I would probably watch the second one, yeah.
And that's, I think it's a Randall one. If I'm not mistaken, because finally we have one that talks fully. And I believe he's voiced by the same guy who, if you've watched the television series of The Odd Couple, I think it's the guy who played Felix. I think he's the talking. It's Tony Randall, if I remember correctly. Tony Randall. He's known as the Brain Gremlin. They have kind of a leader one this time. And with the previews, I thought it was going to be the Brain Gremlin. But there is another striped gremlin who is vicious like Stripe. But what's fun about the new batch is, all right. Saruman, Christopher Lee, great and known for like playing horror stuff.
Oh, right, yeah.
He's because it all takes place. They're kind of goofing on Donald Trump a little bit. They have because Don Glover, or not Donald Glover, John Glover, plays Clamp, Mr. Clamp, who has built this high-rise, high-tech building with all kinds of fun high-tech stuff for Gremlins to play with, and it all takes place inside his building. But he's got so much goofy stuff in there. It's like a mall and a TV station or whatever. All right. But what was the thing that was in the thing that I was about to get to? Oh, yeah. So, all right. So he's also invited some weird biologist people in there. And Christopher Lee is like the head scientist. And he's got all these weird DNA of all these different things. And when the gremlins get in there, the striped one drinks a spider one and becomes this big spider gremlin. Ooh. And then the brain one is one. He drinks this brain one. And it's funny because after he drinks the brain one, he's like, and then he talks to the other scientists. Let's talk a little about what's happening in this room here. Now, when you talk about a species such as I and introduce the DNA of us, say, this sort of nature, what do you think the type of thing might would be? And he's like, goes and racks is poetic. And then you even see a little bit where he's on a talk show and they're asking him like, so what does you want? What do you think we want? World conquest. And there's even a little clip of the brain gremlin that cracks me up where they're in like a stocks room and all these gremlins are going, buy, buy, sell, sell. And he's on the phone and says, well, we're telling everybody to invest in shotguns and hand grenades, right, and canned goods, because they're planning to get out of the Clamp building and take over the world at this point. So there's a lot of good jokes that happen when you let Gremlin actually have some full intelligence and talk completely. Also, one that drinks female hormones and turns into the first female gremlin. And it's like Jessica Rabbit as a gremlin. Oh. It's ridiculous.
Well, and the brain one, even he's got, when he's on a talk show, he shoots another one. He's like, it's
yeah. Now, was that civilized? No, clearly not. Yes. it's ridiculous. They make fun of everything for the first one. There even is a fantastic cameo of Hulk Hogan. You don't know who Hulk Hogan is, though.
No.
Wrestler.
Yeah, he was a wrestler. He was the wrestler back in the 80s. He was the WWF before his WWE champion for the longest time. He's still around, but I mean, he's long retired. But he still pops up every once in a while, Hall of Famer and everything. But there's this great scene where, like, you're watching the movie and, like Christopher Lee is giving this whole thing. He's like, there are some genes man was not meant to splice because they think they accidentally created the gremlins. They have no idea where they came from. So they think it must have been taken from their lab, you know. So he's got to making this big speech about there are some genes not meant to splice. And the film suddenly starts messing up and burns through. And you're like, what just happened? And then suddenly you hear, and you see like shadows of gremlins walking past the screen, and they start putting on, I guess, what's supposed to be like adult movie or whatever. It's supposed to be girls that were supposed to be naked, I guess, playing volleyball, but you don't see anything because you see heads or whatever. But they're like, ha ha, laughing. And then all of a sudden we cut to an outside of a movie theater, and this mother's going over with the two kids and talks to the theater manager. She's like, oh, what are you up to, Sean? I mean, this is worse than the first one. It's like, well, what's going on? Oh, apparently we have gremlins in the projection booth. So you see the story of the manager of the theater go out there and duck down inside the theater room. It's like, hey, excuse me, we have gremlins up in the projection booth. Could you do something? Hulk Hogan gets on and say, gremlins here? And he turns around and looks straight into the screen like he's yelling at them. Like, all right, you better show the rest of gremlins too before the Hulkster comes right up after you and all this stuff. It's hilarious. Especially if you're familiar with Hulk Hogan. And he's like, you think the Grimsters can stand up to the Hulkster? And he was famous for ripping off his shirt. And he starts tearing it off. Now, you better show the rest of Gremlins too before I come up there. Because his thing is, what you going to do when a Hulkamania runs all over it? So basically, what you going to do is the Gremlin. And then he looks deadpan into the camera. Sorry, folks. Won't happen again. And then they cut the movie. You know, the camera goes back to the screen. And the movie starts back up again. It is a fantastic cameo. And it's completely hairy. It's I think one of the earliest fourth wall breaks you get to see in cinema, other than a really bad fourth wall break in the Masters of the Universe movie where we get Teela looking at the camera and going, woman at arms, after she does a really bad, stupid thing that doesn't actually make any sense. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yes, but so get around and watch the second one. It had a great, actually a fun scene. Well, I like it. It's kind of panned by most people because it's after what they established that was funny in the first one, but it was kind of a horror comedy. Then this one is just complete screwball comedy. Mm-hmm. And so it was a little off-putting for a lot of people who were fans of the first one. But if you take it for what it is, where they're kind of making fun of how silly this really is and just having fun with it, it's a hoot. Mm-hmm. Should we watch the second one when they leave?
I think so.
Okay, that's what I was kind of thinking. Because after you watch the first, you kind of have to watch the second one. It's got some gross parts, too, with some shredded gremlins.
If I don't go straight to sleep when we get home tonight, I'll probably watch it.
Awesome.
If not, then I'll probably watch it tomorrow night. So,
awesome, because you'll probably like it. It's silly. It's got some gross, but
we got a really busy rest of our day.
Yeah, we're planning to be busy too.
Yeah.
All right, but that is our
second movie. Yeah,
at Gremlins, and yes, we recommend it. And of course, we had to. I had to bring the sequel in. So,
you're hearing it now, other teenagers. Go watch it.
Go watch it.
Go watch it
with Milk Duds. Milk Duds.
Okay, as we wrap this up. There are some bits that I didn't get to mention. I forgot to talk about the impact and like the toys for Gremlins. This is why this to me is kind of also a Christmas movie. Other than the fact that the story is, you know, pertains with Christmas. And we talked about that at the beginning there. But that Christmas, it was a Gremlins Christmas for me. We got sleeping bags, got a plush gizmo that you shake him and he would squeak. Many of you probably had that. There was also like a large plastic gizmo that was kind of, true to size for Gizmo that I remember getting. And also my brother and I both got these little, there were these toys and they were not the greatest idea for toys, but it made sense for Gremlins to have something on this water type of thing where you'd put this little figure in water and it would grow. Well, we never wanted to take it out of the water because we didn't know what would happen. And eventually my mother just threw them away. Our little Gremlins toys that you put in water. There were some other things that were made where put in water, then it would grow. But I don't, that's all it would do. You know, that was the whole bit of the toy. Didn't make a lot of sense. So that kind of went out of fashion pretty quick. So, yeah. Of course, we are going to mention this. By the way, Diz Radio was back, and I'm doing my segments again for Diz Radio. So if you have your subscription on that one, John is back. Jonathan Johnson has brought the show back. It's a celebrity interview show. He's kind of veered away from Disney as well, although he's still going to have some Disney content to show up, which I feel like I've kind of managed to do that too. There's still been some Disney content that's gotten into the show, even though we've pulled away from Disney. But Diz Radio is back. Make sure you check that out. It's time to wrap this show up. So make sure, of course, you visit Neverland Podcast Reviews. And you'll find now, it used to be My Podcast Reviews. Now it is known as Podgagement. There's a link right there on the front page. To get in there, you get a nice discount for a very low fee. Well, I think his fees are changing, but still a very reasonably priced. You can get your reviews even internationally for your podcast and a lot of other stats and things like that. I'm working with stuff where I'm bringing back the Mighty Marvel Tooncast, y'all. I don't know when, but it's coming. for those of you that were listeners to that or maybe not familiar with it, go download it. Go check it out. I do have the feed up on Red Circle of something Tim Nidell of Saturday Morning Rewind were doing. He had to step away, and I've been needing a new co-host for that for years. I mean, I think that was 2017, I think. It was a really fun show. It was getting popularity, and I'm going to resurrect it, and hopefully everybody who's getting, you know, we're enjoying that show will come back and enjoy that show again. But yes, Podgagement has some features that I'm trying to get to work on. I'm rebuilding the website for the Mighty Marvel Tooncast. So make sure you click on that. Also, of course, that Dubby link. Don't forget about Dubby. But you can leave a review right there on from the front page. There's some links in there to leave reviews. So make sure you do that as well. When I get a review, I get notified. I haven't gotten a review in a long time, y'all. Reviews really are a great way to help share the show and let me know what you think of the show. And I will read those online. You can also see some of the reviews on the website, NeverlandPodcast.com. We'd like to thank Karen Kennedy, Ricky Pope of Christian Nerds Unite, and Darren Wilhite of the Will Height and Wall Show for helping me out with the intro of the show. Don't forget, you can email us, podcast@NeverlandPodcast.com. Haven't gotten an email in a while. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, NeverlandPcast. You'll find us on Facebook. I think it's still under Neverland Podcast. We're becoming the Phantom Nexus. We're also we have a group and a fan page. I don't think I've renamed those yet. I forgot. I haven't made a note in my notes about changing that over, but I have been trying to change the name of the page, but I think the link to get there is still the same. We have lots of fun on the group. I have a lot of news that I posted into the group that we did not talk about here on the show, but we might mention next show. We're going to have to do some Christmas stuff because we're getting into Christmas, and I'm almost on my own Christmas vacation. But don't forget, of course, about Patreon. You can find links to our Patreon right there on NeverlandPodcast.com. And I will make sure in the show notes that you have a link if you would like to get our exclusive content. As I've mentioned before, there is an extended version by at least 12 minutes of this episode that you can get as an exclusive content. And hey, maybe you're hearing me talk about this while you're actually on the exclusive content. It will be ad-free, y'all, except for when I mention, of course, W and stuff that I put in ads myself. But you won't have any of those other ads that come in from Red Circle. And you'll be helping out the show. So it's a win-win situation. So definitely check it out. But, of course, until I see you again, what do we say at the end of every show? Get lost. In an adventure! And I will see you next time.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.